Hello, and welcome to the Tesla Tips and Tricks Podcast. This is Rod Stuckey here with me, Tori Hornsby. Tori, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing awesome, thanks. So looking forward to jumping into today's podcast where we're going to cover some of our more interesting posts from our T3 Facebook group, including the new Grok update. We're going to cover some concerns about parking in a garage due to Tesla's catching on fire. Never heard that one before, have we? Solving suspension squeaks and what do you do when your AC starts smelling bad and much more. But first, for those who may be unfamiliar, Tori, tell us a little bit more about the T3 community.
Sure. We're the largest Tesla Tips community in the world. We have over 281,000 members, and our community has one goal, and that is to provide great real-world tips and tricks that maximize the Tesla ownership experience for Tesla owners and prospective Tesla owners. We also provide member deals and Tesla news and EV news, of course. And I do want to mention, if you haven't joined our Facebook group as we're going through these posts, we welcome you to come and join and come and click on and search, find these different posts and comment and add your thoughts on them. And also, we release our very best content on our YouTube channel. So if you've not done this already, be sure that you go to youtube.com/@TeslaTipsAndTricks, youtube.com/@TeslaTipsAndTricks, and subscribe to our channel. And like this video, add some comments. It really helps the algorithms to show you better content in the future.
That's right. And we're excited about growing our YouTube channel. In this day and age, we're seeing more and more AI, artificial intelligence, with regards to Tesla. And our channel is filled with a different type of AI called actual intelligence. We only do it through real humans and real content that comes from humans. It's artificial.
Rod, you said something to me recently, and AI is a buzzword right now. There's a lot of value in that word, I would even say. And your comment was, when did artificial become valuable? And I was thinking about that, like artificial flavors. It's right. Horrible.
Artificial colors, artificial flavor, artificial personalities. Nothing artificial is good.
Except for AI, which then again, sometimes it's not.
Yeah. And hey, that is a great lead in to our first post that we're going to talk about. And this is about all new Tesla vehicles delivered on or after July 12, 2025 will have Grok available. For all other Tesla vehicles, to enable Grok, you must have the following: an AMD processor, vehicle software version 2025.26, and premium connectivity or Wi-Fi connection. Tori, take us through this post about some Grok action in your Tesla.
Yeah, and I'll mention on the software version, you have to have 2025.26 or higher. So you don't have to have that exact version. If you have anything greater than that, it's fine. But the big deal here is the AMD processor, which a lot of cars, I don't think they started coming with them until maybe late 2021 or 2022. If you know the answer to that for sure, of when the AMD processor started mainstream being installed in Tesla's, comment on the video and let us know. But you do have to have the AMD processors. The 2021 and newer vehicles, the majority of them have Intel processors. And Tesla did add a note that says Grok may become available for additional Tesla vehicles with an update in the future. So we'll see how that goes. But for now, it is the AMD processor. And, I'll just start with kind of a basic comment here by Cherie. Hope I said that right. Cherie says, what is Grok? And we've talked about this before, but Grok is the name of Tesla's AI or Twitter, X. It's called XAI. And think ChatGPT, but this is Tesla's version of that. And then Lanil commented.
Hey, Tori, Cherie said, what's ChatGPT? I'm just kidding. I made that up. But hey, if she didn't know what Grok is, she may not know what ChatGPT is. And that's not me being ugly. It's, there's still a lot of professions, a lot of people out there that just don't have a need in their life for a ChatGPT. So tell us what ChatGPT is.
So it's all based on AI, artificial intelligence. And when you think about Google doing a search, if you want to find something out, you go to Google and you do a search, and then it brings back relevant websites that match your search. And then you can go and investigate on those websites and find your answer. What AI does is it's got these massive amount of processing power, and it's able to go and find the answer for you and then answer without you having to go to all those websites. So it will go and find any question that you have, it will find an answer for it and answer it most of the time correctly. And that's what Lanil says, is it's essentially right now, it's voice commands on steroids. Your car can have a full conversation with you. It doesn't control the car yet, but it does integrate in with your speaker to where you could, actually, I've got a comment down here from, let's see, Tom, where's Tom? Here it is. It says, Tom said, any problem or question in the world, your car can tell you how or answer you. And then Terry commented to that or replied and said, like, do crabs have eyelashes? And that sounds absurd, but you could ask Grok, do crabs have eyelashes? And it will answer with the correct answer. So it's almost a time waster at this point of just being able to waste some time, talk to your car, ask questions, get really good answers from it processing and scrubbing the web and finding answers for you for any question that you have. And then I've just got one last comment here by Simeon. And Simeon said, implementation looks pointless at this stage because it doesn't control the car. However, this sets precedence for the future. So in the future, you're going to be able to talk to your car and say, hey, order my usual order at Starbucks and route me there. And the car would do both of those things. So that's what I'm really looking forward to. Right now, conversing with the car is not something that I would do a lot, although I think it would be funny to waste some time doing that. But that is what AI is, and that's what this Grok integration into Tesla's is right now. It's glorified voice commands.
Yeah, Ryan said it's like Siri, but smarter. I mean, that's a
good comment.
You know, you mentioned it's kind of like Google on, you know, taken to the whole next level. I'm still trying to process in my head, how could it be used, Tori? You know, something you and I used to say back in our younger years was, you know, when we were listening to cassette tapes and audio CDs about business and whatever topic or subject that we were immersing ourselves in at the time. And we would call our car a university on wheels because we would be listening and learning and studying as we were driving. So I guess theoretically with Grok, any hobby that you had, any business situation that you were in, you could be riding down the road on your way to work, preparing for a meeting, and probably show up to that meeting looking like you knew a lot more than you really did, or had done a lot more homework than you had really did, because you asked Grok, how do you solve this problem? A quick story. My daughter is managing an Airbnb, and they were doing a grand opening, and she had the Chamber of Commerce was going to come out and do a ribbon cutting ceremony. And so she was going to do a speech at the ribbon cutting ceremony, and she asked ChatGPT, same as Grok, to write a ribbon cutting ceremony speech for, and then she just gave four or five benefits of the Airbnb, and she sent me this speech, and it was unbelievable. And it spit it out in about 2 minutes. And so that's just a simple example of how artificial intelligence can help you in a pinch with your profession or with, you know, I mean, I could see where, Tori, you could be on your way to go fishing for a certain type of fish in a certain area and ask Grok, and it could probably tell you what kind of bait and line and how deep to fish. I mean, that's just another wild example, but
I hadn't thought about the University on Wheels aspect just because I tend to listen to Audible, but I could see where that could come in handy. You're going to a client meeting, you know, that's in an industry that you know a little bit about or a lot about, and you could just say, "Hey, Grok, you know, tell me the 5 most important things about this industry or this product," and it would go and find it. And what makes Grok really cool at this stage, the integration with Tesla, is every other case that I've used ChatGPT or Grok, I type it in. So you have to go to the site and you have to type it in. And the conversation, you can upload a voice file, but it's not speaking back. It's not a conversation. It's text back and forth. So having this integration where you can speak to Grok and Grok speaks back to you, pretty awesome.
Tori, I'm picturing you on your way to your tee time to play golf, asking Grok how to fix that wicked slice off the tee box.
Yeah.
Isn't that something? Boy, no telling what the future holds. All right, so we're going to move on from Grok to our next featured post. I had 190 miles of range left, and it's only 146 miles to get home, but I ended up with a negative 5% battery. How is this even possible, Tori?
I think the best answer to this is by Ken Schultz. He says, the battery doesn't store miles. It stores energy, and it can use more energy to accelerate quickly, drive uphill, drive into a wind, drive in the rain, drive with the window open, run with the air conditioning, accelerate more quickly. So his point here is that when you put it on range and it's showing miles, you expect to be able to drive, you know, 190 miles. But the battery isn't storing miles. It's storing energy, and you're using that energy for the display. You're using it for the air conditioning, for the audio system, for full self-drive, the computers, the cameras, and it, therefore you never get the full range that you see in mileage. And that's why a lot of people, including Ken here, says change your display to show a battery percentage instead of estimated miles. That really helps people connect dots and going, I've got this much percentage. And just in general, you'll call it 80% of your battery capacity, if you're driving normal, could be used for your range, but it's never 100%. And then I've got one more comment here by MG, and he kind of hits some specific things here too. He says, air conditioning, altitude change, your speed, just turn on the navigation and it'll tell you if you can make the range or not. The problem is people that they think that they can make it because they see a number of miles in the battery, but the car knows better. And that is the big thing. I do navigation pretty much everywhere because I'm using full self-drive though, I guess, to be fair. But if I'm taking any trip, even if I wasn't using full self-drive, if I was taking any trip over, you know, 20 miles, I'm going to go ahead and put it in there because the car does know all. It knows better. And if I'm going to need to stop to recharge the battery, it will route me there. I don't have to think about it. That's why I put every address, almost everywhere I go, I use Tesla's navigation to take.
Yeah, that's what DLT says. A more accurate estimate is given on navigation due to it takes a more accurate estimate is given on navigation due to it takes into account driving conditions and your driving habits. Your outside temperature of 140 degrees is probably a factor too.
But hold on, just on that point, that's a really good point, because the computers could factor in how much miles you have left, but it doesn't know how and where you're going to be driving. When you put something in navigation, the car goes, oh, it's interstate, it's 70 miles an hour, it's going to use more battery. That's why your battery percentage or range is not accurate, because it's showing the capacity of it, the stored energy, versus when you put in navigation that 300 mile trip, it factors in the uphill, the downhill, the type of driving you're going to be doing. Interstate uses way more battery than around town. It's actually opposite of a gas vehicle. Gas vehicle on the interstate you know, you burn less gas than you do stop and go driving around town. In a Tesla, you actually get, I get better range when I'm in stop and go traffic around town. So, but when you put it in the navigation, it can see what you're going to do and therefore it can compensate. That's a really good point by ELT.
Yeah, that is a good point. And so let me ask you about this one from Jeff Watkins' story. He says, I think it's the heat. I drove from San Clemente, California, back home to St. George, Utah, and experienced the same thing. It's so hot. The AC runs more. I was also driving fast. So, I mean, I'm down here in South Florida right now, and it's smoking hot. Is the heat just across the board going to use more battery? I'm assuming so.
Well, yes. What's funny about this, though, is that cold uses battery too, because the battery has to warm itself up. Batteries need to be warm in order to function at properly to output the full amount of power. And when they're too warm, though, they have to cool down, and therefore it runs a radiator fan. So if it's too cold, it's running the heat pump and it's circulating the coolant to actually warm up the battery. If it's too hot, it's running the fan in the radiator and the pump to cool down the battery. I would say that that's definitely contributing to this. I've noticed that on the chart on my Model X, I've chosen to show the energy graph on the right side of the screen that's in behind the steering wheel. And I pay attention to my watt hours per mile. And I love that because I can see if it's using a lot. And when I first get in my car and it's like hot, it's 110 degrees in my car, and the AC kicks on full blast, and I'm driving, you know, down the road, I'll notice my watt hours per mile will jump way up over 400. And then as I get going, Model X's are power hungry, but it'll drop down to 330, 340, maybe 350, depending on what I've got the temperature set at and how I'm driving. So yes, the heat definitely will use more battery because it will have to cool the battery down at some point, just like the cold does to warm up the battery.
Yeah. Yep. So that's good information about range versus estimated mileage. So we're going to move on here to our next post. After we purchased our Model Y on Wednesday, we have been warned from our anti-Tesla friends that insurance will prevent us parking in the garage. I Googled it and seems this might actually be a thing. I have 3 emails to my agent, and he has yet to address the question. Anyone have experience with insurance not allowing you to park in the garage? Maybe we should ask Rock, Tori.
Yeah. No need on this one. My comment is actually the top comment here. This post has 145 reactions and 333 comments. My comment actually got 176 likes. And here is what it says. It says, no. It sounds like those anti-Tesla friends are spewing some rhetoric. In fact, gas-powered cars are significantly more likely to catch fire than an electric vehicle. The National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB, this is a U.S. regulatory agency that tracks national transportation safety, and they log this stuff. They know it. They report that there are 25 EV fires for every 100,000 vehicles sold. Compare this to 1,530 gas car fires per 100,000 vehicles. 25 for every 100,000. So this is per capita. It's a percentage. So you can't say, well, yeah, there's less Teslas out there. Of course, there's more gas. No. This is per capita. This is per 100,000 vehicles. 25 compared to 1,530. So that means that gas vehicles are over 61 times more likely to catch fire. As a percentage, it's 6,120% more likely that is more likely to catch fire on a gas vehicle. And I was watching this video, Rod, and I do have one comment, but I want to see what your thoughts are on this first. And the video said, you know, if we all had just electric vehicles and somebody came along and said, I'm going to create a gasoline engine and you're going to pour 20 gallons of this flammable substance into your car, and it'll be in a container in the car that's connected to the car. And then the car will run, and it will, through explosions that are happening in there and pumps that are pumping this flammable liquid up to the front, that's what's going to power the car. People would be like, you are crazy. That's the stupidest idea ever. And that, I'm a hot rod guy. I love gas engines, but that comment really struck a nerve with me because I was like, yeah, that would be crazy if it was all electric and people said, we're going to put this flaming liquid in the car and store it, and that's how we'll power the car. I was like, that would be a nerve.
An internal combustion is fuel, fire, and compression. The middle word is fire. There is literally that is the foundation, fuel, fire, and compression of an internal combustion engine. I was watching a motocross race from 2 weekends ago, or 4th of July weekend, and a guy's 250F KTM caught fire while he was riding it, and he didn't know it. And he's going down the track with a fire in between his legs, and that's an internal combustion engine. So, it would, if we all had electric vehicles, that would sound pretty absurd.
Yeah, and not to mention, too, you know, gas fumes are toxic, so if you have a fuel leak, it's not a good thing, obviously. And so it's not even a comment. The original poster provided an update on their post and said, I should have specified homeowners insurance claims if the Tesla were to catch on fire that my auto property damage coverage maxes out at $300,000, which is less than half the value of my home. And that is a good point. So there are restrictions in your homeowners insurance policy that, depending upon the cause, like for instance, if a manufacturer's defect of something caused a fire, the insurance company might say that was their fault. You know, you take it up with them. So there are limitations there, but that provision that the insurance company puts in there to max out $300,000 worth of auto property damage is not EV related. It's not even Tesla related. So I would say this is more of an issue still for a gas vehicle because they're 6,120% more likely to catch on fire. So park in your garage. Don't worry about it is what I say. And EVs are far less likely to catch on fire than a gas vehicle. So if you're worried about your insurance not covering the full amount of a fire, then don't park any vehicle in your garage. But certainly you wouldn't want to do gas over electric.
We'll wrap this thing up. And this is what is so great about the Tesla Tips and Tricks community. I mentioned, you know, this is actual real Tesla owners, 333 comments. And just to sum up the majority of the comments, it's we have State Farm. We've never heard this. We have Progressive. It's fine. We have USAA. It's fine. The 300 plus comments of real Tesla owners and real people, not Grok, not Google, you know, that are saying that this is just flat out not the case. And so just a great resource of quality content from real Tesla owners, making it abundantly clear that this is absolutely nothing to be concerned about. So with that, we will move on to our next post. I noticed many owners having issues with squeaky suspension, apparently noise coming from the top ball joint. If you're looking on YouTube, we'll pull up a picture here. Someone recommend replacement. Some made puncture and spray grease. I can say it's easy to remove boot clip with a syringe. Press it roughly 15 milliliters. Of grease. I kind of butchered that, Tori. Take us through that post.
Well, I'll give you some grace here. I think that you read it as it was written. So, not calling anybody out there, but you definitely read it.
There's a great picture here, though. Picture's worth a thousand words, and you can see what I'm looking at just appears to me to be a worn out rubber bushing.
Yes. So if that bushing, if the actual rubber boot is cracked and splitting and worn out, it has to be replaced. You have to replace the component. And that's what Charles Lay says here, is that this is a temporary fix. Regreasing the bushing is a temporary fix. And Alan comments and says, well, it's worked on mine fine for a year and a half now. And then Charles replied to that and said, it's worked for a year and a half for me too, but now it's squeaking again. So I think at this point I'll replace it. Well, what I want to point out here is that, so what a bushing is it's for these, it's metal on metal. And inside there's grease that makes the metal on metal have a barrier to move around back and forth so that it doesn't wear out metal on metal. Well, as that grease deteriorates and the metal on metal happens, it starts to squeak. So if you're going to do this regrease with the syringe and push it into that bushing, you got to do it as soon as you start hearing the noises, because the more that it is squeaking, the more it's on metal and it's actually wearing it out. Or if the rubber bushing is cracked and deteriorated, you got to replace it because it can't hold the grease. It's just going to keep on giving you problems. So if you look at, we'll put it up here on the screen here. It's a post by, let me find MG or Ken Schultz. Let me see here.
While you're pulling that up, Tori, my experience with challenges like this are you're risking potentially, it's a temporary fix. And if you continue to try to milk along the temporary fix, you end up with worn out additional parts that end up costing you more than it would have cost you to just replace the bushings, whether that be the joints or the arms there. So,
yep. So, and that's what you find in the comments, are people saying, hey, if it's under warranty, they'll fix it under warranty. So just go and do it. But Paul has a comment here and says, hey, I just had the same problem. I took it to the dealer. It cost me $2,250 because the bushings were cracked and they had to change my control arms. I was hoping for just a grease job, but I wasn't able to do that. Have 100,000 miles. So not bad as a first expense. Still $2,250 is a lot of money. And especially if you can re-grease it. So is it temporary? Well, getting a new one is temporary, because that part, metal on metal with grease in it, if you can't replace the grease, that's why there's those little grease fittings on lawnmowers and tractors and a lot of other vehicles. And probably, I don't know why there's
Zert rhythm. Fittings.
Zert fittings. I don't know why Tesla didn't put one on this. They're brilliant engineers, but to me, it seems like they should have done that. But anytime you have a bushing that has grease in it, unless you can add grease, it is a temporary part. And then replacing it with the new one is a temporary fix if you can't re-grease it. So this could work as a very effective fix for a while, but you will have to do it again, just like in every other automobile. When you do a service and they have those Zert fittings and they add grease, that's what they're doing, is they're adding grease to those bushings to keep metal from metal wearing out.
Yeah. So probably need to take it to the dealership, is, would be recommended, especially if it's under warranty. Don't wait. There's one other comment here. I just want to mention, spray WD-40 goes away instantly for months. I don't recommend this. I think a lot of people don't realize WD-40 is not only a lubricant, it's a degreaser. WD-40 breaks down grease better than Simple Green or actual degreasing products. WD-40 is an interesting product, but it's not a lubricant. It is a degreaser. And that seems counterintuitive, but trust me, as a longtime motorcycle guy, I have found it and verified that WD-40 is a degreaser. So
a young Tory would take WD-40 after he had cleaned his engine bay and spray it all around, because it would shine and it would clean. And it does a great job of degreasing and cleaning stuff. You're right. Yeah. And it does make it shiny and it feels like it's a grease, but the WD in WD-40 actually stands for water displacement. And what and an older, wiser Tory now knows is when you spray WD-40 all over rubber, especially if you're doing it consistently, you're actually drying it out.
Yeah.
And it's going to start cracking and wear out faster. So do not do that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we're going to move on to our last post. Does your Model Y HVAC/AC smell bad? I'm paraphrasing. How do you guys fix it? I heard that it's from mold and mildew in the evaporator.
So what is causing this is usually not mold and mildew in the evaporator. It's actually mold and mildew growing and contaminants growing on your filter. So you've got a cabin filter that when you turn on your air conditioning, the air runs through that cabin filter from the outside into the inside. And you can imagine that as it's getting wet and as you're running over things and just different material gets caught up in there, they get really nasty, actually. You'll be surprised when you pull those things off how bad they can get. But they catch all that stuff. They catch all the contaminants. They filter the air, and therefore they need to be replaced. And they sometimes can need to be replaced every 6 or 9 months. And in fact, when they start smelling, when you get in your Tesla and you turn on your air conditioning or your heat and you smell something a little funky, you need to replace your cabin filter. That's the actual indicator that you need to replace it. And then there's also in Model S's, Model X's since 2016, and Model Y since 2020, there is the bioweapon defense mode, which uses a HEPA filter. It's not in any Model 3 because of the space constraints of a Model 3, the Model Y since 2020, Model S and X since 2016. And what it does is it pulls in outside air and it filters it through a HEPA filter. And basically what a HEPA filter does is it removes like 99.97% of all particles in the air, as small as 0.3 micrometers in diameter. So it is a secondary filtration system with activated carbon. It removes odors, gases, bacteria, viruses, pollen, and mold spores. So when you start smelling, you really should go ahead and replace both of those because they're catching all those contaminants. And with the biodefense mode HEPA filter or the bioweapon defense mode HEPA filter, it is it's catching even more contaminants. And so when you smell that smell, replace your cabin filter and then go ahead and replace your HEPA filter as well. I will be releasing a video on this soon, actually. I'm just waiting on my cabin filter to show up. I've got the HEPA filter for my Model X. I'm going to be filming a video on how to do this. But you can find how to do this on the Tesla website. And there's a lot of videos out there too to show you how to replace it yourself. Or you can have Tesla do it. Tesla Service Center will handle it for you.
Tory, let me ask you about this post from Brock. He says, turn your air conditioning on low 60 degrees and let it run on max for about 15 minutes. Now, that doesn't to me sound near as proper is what you're describing with replacing the filters. But then Thomas replies and says, the service department came out and told me to do this and I haven't had an issue since. Laura says, why? What does this do? And Brock replied and said, it makes the compressor run at full blast, making sure the moisture and bacteria are eliminated from the system. So would you call this a temporary fix, or what are your thoughts on those comments there?
I would call it a temporary fix. So let me, okay. And here's why. So everything they've said here is accurate. And you know, my Tesla, it has started to smell. And that's what I do is I run it on max for a minute and the smell goes away pretty quickly. But it says that it's eliminating moisture and bacteria. Well, I would say that it's reducing. It's not eliminating, right? So how does the air conditioner kill the bacteria? It doesn't. It can remove the moisture and it can make it less effective, make it less smelly, but it's not eliminating the bacteria. It's much like taking off your stinky, smelly socks and then putting them out in front of a fan and then saying, all right, they're clean. Well, no, they may not smell as bad now, but they're certainly not clean. And so when it starts smelling bad, it really is, for me, it's signaling that you need to replace the cabin filter at least.
Boy, sometimes there's nothing like a good old analogy to paint a great picture for my thick skull. That's all I need to know, Tori, is I don't want to air dry my stinky socks. I just want to get them replaced or washed up properly. It's so
quite a visual when you think of it in smelly socks.
Yeah,
sitting on a fan.
Especially if you live in South Florida. So with that, that wraps up this session of the Tesla Tips and Tricks podcast. Thanks everybody for listening. Tori, any parting words?
Be sure that you like our podcast if you're listening to it, or the videos on Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn or wherever you're watching this. Typically the full podcast is on YouTube, and subscribe to our channel. It's a big help for us, and it also is a big help to signal to YouTube that you want to see this style of content, EV Tesla related tips and tricks in the future.
Sounds good. Thanks everybody for listening and watching, and we'll see you on the next episode.